G'day everyone and welcome to the Talking Dice Podcast. Whether you're a dice maker, collector or just a tabletop RPG lover, we've got you covered. I'm Aaron, the host of the show and author of the Critmaker Guide to Dicecraft, now available on Amazon. Running a podcast in 2024 is expensive, with hardware, hosting, production and advertising costs us a large sum of money each month. If you like this podcast, please consider a one-time donation via Ko-fi, or if you love it, please consider supporting us on Patreon. For details, please check out our website, talkingdice.co. And on today's show, we're chatting with Holly from The Dice Shin. With a unique eclectic style, beautiful photography and abundant Instagram photos, she's one of the UK's most loved dice makers. Holly, it's an absolute pleasure having you on the show today. Now, Holly, you've been playing D&D now for over 5 years. You've played some incredible campaigns. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the character you're playing right now?
I'm playing a Hexblade Warlock. She's an Asma. She's brilliant. So her patron is actually my first character from the game that we played before this one. So
yeah, wow.
It was on a little continent before, like it was like locked in and you couldn't get off, and there was massive like time dilations and stuff, which that campaign like solved all of that. But my previous character sacrificed herself, but she was a bit chaotic and some people thought she was evil, but you know, it was all for the greater good. So to tamper her out, one of the other team members of the last campaign decided that we needed to be brought together for balance, because he was really good and I was very chaotic thing. So my character's patron at the minute is actually that person, and like she was a bit of an anti-druid. So she was a druid, but she had like a special pauldron that basically made her change into monsters and monsters instead of beasts, and it was brilliant. So like by the end, like level 20, she was like cracking it up and everything. It was brilliant. So yeah, my new character, she's a Hexblade Warlock with a few differences, and yeah, she loves the stars, she loves like everything cosmic. She's very like flirtatious, and because she's a warlock, I've really played on the charisma angle, and she basically tries to get everything she wants.
Like a spell slinging bard.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah. So there's a lot of Eldritch Blasts going on, and a Master of Disguise. But yeah, she's really fun to play. Again, she's very chaotic. I don't think I could ever play a lawful character. I could never play a lawful character. I can do good, I can do evil, I can do neutral in between, but I cannot not be chaotic. And that is the same for my dice.
And is that more of a reflection of you, Holly?
Yeah, I think so. I am a little bit chaos.
Aren't we all? Now, you mentioned your dice making there, Holly. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the Dice Shin?
So I have a massive love for fantasy books and stuff. So I was reading the City of Brass I was reading at the time by S.A. Chakraborty. And I just fell in love with the kind of Arabian vibes of it all, and the imagery and the story between the Djinn and the Deva and the Mirrid and all that lot. And I just love it. And I know that Djinn are fiery beings, and my logo, my little Djinn, is actually blue, but I didn't think the dice would really lend itself to being a flame. So I don't actually know how it got onto blue, really, like more water-based. I think I got that from the Mirrid. And maybe a little bit of Aladdin.
I definitely get the Aladdin vibe there. So tell me, Holly, how long have you been making dice for, and how did you get into it?
So my husband is notoriously bad to buy presents for. Like, it's really difficult. He loves everything personalized, and he loves things handmade. But most of the things he wants, he just gets himself. So it makes birthdays and Christmas very difficult. So a friend of mine had ordered the Sophie and Toffee box, which is like a resin box, and the 1 month special they had was dice molds. And I thought, oh, that would be an amazing present, you know, handmade dice. I'm a little bit of a dice goblin at the time. I'm collecting factory made dice. I didn't even really know handmade dice were a thing. And I mean, 4 years ago, they weren't really that much of a thing. And I thought, oh, that would be an amazing present, you know. So I said to her, oh, can I borrow your set to make some dice? And I made these awful dice. Like, they were half clear with gold flakes in,
yeah.
And half like this really nice sparkly red. And they were made with UV resin. I don't know whether you've ever used an opaque material in UV resin,
oh,
but
yeah.
It doesn't really cure.
Yeah.
So Yeah, I made these set of dice, and the Sophie and Toffee molds are not easy to use. But yeah, and I made them, and he absolutely loved them. And I thought, this is amazing. Like, I could make dice. And then I found handmade dice, like, properly. And I was like, fine, right. So I got some Chinese factory-made dice. I drilled some holes in them, put toothpicks in, made my own mold. Had no experience using resin or silicone before. Made my own molds, and then started to make my own dice. I didn't have a pressure pot at first. My dice came out looking absolutely awful and bubbly. But yeah, but then I thought, you know what? I made dice for everyone in my party. I was like, you know what? I really want to step up my game. So I'll get a pressure pot. So I bought one of those paint spray pots and I converted it myself. And I remember the most stressful thing was trying to get that middle pole out of the lid of the pressure paint pot. It was awful.
The answer to that is a hacksaw.
Yeah. Well, I ended up trying all the tools I had, which isn't very many, all the tools my friend had, which also wasn't very many. So then we ended up in Halfords, which is like a car part shop, and they took it into their back room. They had like a big vise and they wrenched it off in their vise for me. So I was so thankful. And then I basically just prayed and hoped and watched about 1,500 videos of like how to attach parts and how to do it and everything, and it worked, and I've still got it today.
And does it still hold pressure for 24 hours or
no? It has to stay plugged in, and I can't remember how I made it, so I don't want it to break, because I'll have to figure out how to make it again, and I can't deal with it. It was so stressful. But yeah, so I spent so much money on converting that pressure pot. Like, I probably spent more than I needed to, because I just was like, right, I need all the bits. And I ended up buying more than I needed. And I thought, right, well, I've spent all this money. This is just a hobby. But now I'm going to have to sell some, because I have to explain the thing. And then I never stopped. I did some like auctions on Facebook Marketplace on the Dice Goblin Dice Horse acquisitions and stuff like that, and stuff sold, and I was like, oh well, people actually want my dice, this is amazing, this is humbling. So, and I set up my Etsy page, and it was 4 years in March just gone.
Yeah, wow.
That was the anniversary of setting up that page. So I'd started in November, which was my husband's birthday, the November before, and then by the March I was full on Etsy shop, because I just got so addicted. And then COVID happened from the April, so then I just found myself having so much time. Like, my day job, they were getting laptops out to everyone, but because I wasn't like a vital role at that point, they were like, oh, you're going to be the last one to receive a laptop. And I was like, well, what do I do? And they were like, whatever, like, you can't do anything without a laptop, but we're still going to pay you. So I was like, oh, brilliant. So I had all this time to like just build that initial bit, and it was great.
That's a terrible position to be in. You know, here, we'll pay you, and you figure out how to use your time.
Well, yeah, but there's nothing I can do, because all my like day job works on a computer. So
without my laptop.
I was stuck. I couldn't go into the office. So I had a nice relaxing time. It's brilliant.
And just looking at Instagram, you got 12,200 followers who seem to appreciate your dice as well. So you've got quite a fan base there.
It's really surprising, because I don't take to social media well. I don't enjoy social media as much as I should.
You don't, but you've posted 1,251 posts on Instagram.
But most of them are photos, they're not videos. I feel like to be in this game, you need to be releasing like videos every 5 minutes.
Yeah, look, I'm 100% the same, and not everyone likes just watching reel after reel after reel. You know, myself, I like long play content. I like podcasts and YouTube videos and Twitch streams, even, you know.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, it just goes to show I've got 12,200 followers, and I don't do that. So, you know, it does work, but.
And are you on TikTok as well?
I tried it.
How did that go?
I did try it. I gave it a good college try. Instagram's the one where I go to. I cross post to Facebook, and that's where I've called it a day. I enjoy making dice, and that's like my hobby, and all this other stuff. I don't get me wrong, I love talking to people. I love talking to people about dice as well. And some of the comments I get is so like humbling, and it makes my day. You know, when somebody says something nice, and without social media, I wouldn't get that. So I it does have, and you know, I wouldn't get the success I get. I wouldn't sell my dice without social media. So there's definitely a place for it. And I'm very thankful for it and everybody that follows me. But it's just one of those things that it's so hard to get right. And it takes a lot of effort, and that takes me away from actually making the dice, which is the bit I love.
It does. I mean, try running a podcast.
That
takes a horrible amount of time. And look, you know, I've committed to kind of doing a weekly show on this, and it just, you know, it takes so much time. You know, we talk for an hour and a half, takes maybe, you know, sometimes 4 or 5 hours to do the editing. And, you know, there's a day gone.
Right? That's a lot.
I kind of started this because I thought it's a challenge because it's such a visual medium we're talking about. We're talking about, you know, dice, and dice is so inherently visual and beautiful, and, you know, everyone's so excited about that, but not everyone always gets to see or hear from Holly and, you know, what makes Holly tick and all of that sort of stuff. So, which gets us onto the topic of style. So Holly, is there a definitive The Dice Gin style?
Yeah. I have no style, really. Like, oh, that sounds really bad. Like, but no, I don't have a particular style that I stick to, but I enjoy a very eclectic dice making thing. Like, it's very rare that I'll make more than one set of anything. And if I make a set again, I might make tweaks to it. But I love using different inclusions. So I love using like feathers. I love glitter. Oh my god, glitter, I love it. Like, you know, people would be really annoyed if they received a card or they opened something that was covered in glitter or like had a, like a glitter bomb. That's like my dream. I love glitter. I would cover every surface in my house if I had enough glitter. I mean, I do have enough glitter.
Probably every surface of your house is covered in glitter if you've used it enough.
yeah pretty much. But yeah, I love glitter in everything. So but yeah, anything. I love using the washi tapes. I love washi tape. Like, it's such a simple way to do dice, but the art of the washi tape is just absolutely gorgeous. I love galaxy styles. As I say, my character in D&D loves space, the stars, and that's pretty much me. I love the galaxy kind of view of everything. But yeah, so I'm very eclectic. I love trying out different techniques, different mediums. I've used Jesmonite before. But if I can make a dice out of it, I'll try and make a dice out of it. Like, if I'm walking around on a day to day and I see something, I'm like, oh, that'll fit in dice. Yeah. That's my main thought process. Like, there's not a day that goes by that I don't think about dice. It's a bit weird.
But it's funny. George from Chicken Wizard said exactly the same thing. He was telling me about a bee he found, and he was so excited about the bee and,
oh yeah,
you know, going to put it in a dice. Yeah. It was dead, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think I'd think the same. If I saw a dead bee somewhere, I'd probably try and like pick it up and put it in a dice. I've put wasps in dice before.
Oh really?
And I've put like chicken bones edgy. In yeah. dice as well. Yep. And that was fun.
Yeah, wow. I've also seen online that you can buy exotic feathers that have been ethically sourced and things like that.
Well, I do actually buy ethically sourced feathers, like parrot feathers. There's this one shop, and they're brilliant. They've basically got an aviary and they wait for like feathers to fall off and then they sell those as like an extra bit. So all the parrot feathers that I use have been nicely collected, like from the bottom of cages and stuff. And you can tell the parrots are like really looked after because the feathers come in absolute pristine condition.
They sound amazing. And it's always good to find a supplier like that who, you know, does care about those sort of things. Now, Holly, you've talked about finding inspiration all around you. Now, do you have any other background in art, or have you, you know, done any kind of art education or anything like that?
Yeah. Kind of. So when I went to college, I did art and design, which was basically looking at all the different mediums of art and design. Like, we did a little bit of resin. I must admit, I didn't click with the resin when we did it, but we did resin, photography, printmaking, all sorts of stuff. And I loved it so much. Jewelry making, fashion, loved it. And then I went on to university to do interior design. And that was a lot of like planning out and drawing and floor plans and then making like little tiny models on like a laser cutter, which was really fun and I enjoyed it. But then in my second year of university, I was kind of like, well, I don't really like the business side of this. So I knew it wasn't what I was going to progress in. But I've always tried to be to lean more towards like creativity and stuff. And the fact that now I can make a business out of my hobby, albeit not a full-time business because I'm not brave enough to take the jump, but the fact that I can make a business out of something that I enjoy and it's creative, it's an amazing outlet for my personality. It's brilliant.
Now, looking at your Etsy store, like, your customers seem to love it as well. You got 1,845 sales, almost all 5-star reviews. You know, people just love what you do.
Yeah.
And maintaining that star seller status is actually pretty complicated.
Yeah. So every single month I have a sale. Every single month without fail. There have been a few instances where I've had to delay it by a week or two, but I pretty much always have a sale. And I think the consistency is key to having a successful business to sell dice. And also, I pride myself on customer service as well. Like, if you've not got great customer service, then you're not going to sell any dice. Or if you do sell dice, people aren't going to come back. And I would say about 60 or 70% of my sales are repeat customers. And I love that people like come back and they trust me with their hard-earned money, especially in the current economic climate, like that they want to spend their hard-earned money on my dice. And it's absolutely fantastic. And I take really good pride in the reviews I get. So I don't ask anybody for reviews. I know I've seen people that are like, leave me a review, and they like badger you a little bit. And I don't do that at all. Like, if people are going to leave me a review, I want them to leave me a review because they want to. And I want them to be 100% honest. And I mean, you can see for yourself, the reviews I've got there are a handful that are 4 stars, but most of them are all 5-star. And I really pride myself on that and the customer service and, like, you know, delivering a good product. That's the most important bit.
You're absolutely right. And it's so important, not just for the coveted star seller status, but, you know, something that's often overlooked is your existing customers. You know, people are usually just so focused on new customers. No, exactly.
It's those repeat customers that will keep it coming. And I would be nowhere without them. And they are amazing. You know, every order that I do for a repeat customer, they get like a free little dice. You know, I've got a pot of dice that are either like failed, or, you know, they're not a full set, or, you know, they haven't sold, and I'll just chuck some free dice in and just to be like, thank you.
And Holly, would you have any advice for anyone wanting to sell on Etsy in 2024? I mean, I know it's vastly different to that pre-pandemic or during pandemic time.
Yeah, so the market is heavily saturated at the minute. So it is a little bit different from when I was doing it. But all I can say is shout about yourself. Like, social media, as much as I begrudge it sometimes, is what sells. And, you know, not just Instagram, but use Facebook as well. Use like Goblin Dice Horde and Handmade Dice Market. The followings that those two sites have got is incredible. And a lot of my customers have come from there as well because they don't use Instagram. So anybody who's trying to like set out in business, make sure you shout about your sales, you post regularly, and, you know, you do it on your main platforms, and go to those Facebook sites, because I know a lot of dice makers that kind of stay away from Facebook.
Yep.
And I get why. Facebook is Facebook.
Yeah, I'm one of them.
Yeah, but honestly, posting in these groups, you need to be there. You need to do it. But yeah, it's a confusing world out there. But yeah, if you're going to get into it business-wise.
I was having the same conversation with Doug from Hedron Rockworks, and he was saying, you know, get out there as soon as you possibly can. Like, start posting your failures, start posting your experiments and things like that. Start getting it out there, and the community will encourage you and offer you feedback. And it's basically that engagement is so much more powerful than just those likes. That
100%. People love to see a human. They don't want to see a robot. They want to see someone.
And that's so important. So at what point in your journey do you think you started doing that? That you started just trying to get your dice out there and get your images out there onto the socials?
I think I waited until I was selling. Oh, well, I waited until I got the pressure part, and then I started posting because I knew I was going to sell eventually, at least some of them. I can't remember. It's so long ago now, but I didn't I don't think I posted anything pre-pressure pop.
I'm trying to see.
Yeah, you'll not scroll to the bottom.
Yeah, I know. I've been scrolling for a while.
I've tried a few times myself. It's just not doable.
And scrolling through your Instagram feed there, you know, I can see there's just so many different colors and inks and dyes and pigments. I bet you've built up quite a collection over the years, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I've got so many. I've got absolutely loads. And I still buy more. Like when I was like brand new, I bought some like cheaper stuff, like cheaper alcohol inks. And then when I eventually upgraded to the your better quality stuff, and I thought, oh, I don't need these anymore. They're taking up room. I've just gone and bought some really cheap inks because I need them for a certain technique. And I'm just like, oh, well, I've got these inks now. I know I played with navy. Like I hadn't had that color before, and I've got navy now, and I'm really excited. I love navy. So yeah.
And it's like you don't even need to buy the stuff. It just miraculously starts appearing in drawers.
Oh, yeah. People want to give you stuff as well. So, like, all my friends and family, if they see something that would, like, look good in a dice or something, and they pick it up for me. Or, like, if they think that something would look good for the photos that I take, they like, any props, they're like, oh, I brought this for your photos. And I was like, oh, thank you. So it just appears.
And that's going to really come in handy. And looking at the photos on your Instagram, they're absolutely incredible.
I can't take full credit for that. So there was a certain point where I gave up on my photography, and my sister-in-law actually does the photos for me every month.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
So yeah, and I mean, she does a really good job there. Look, I'm amazing. Also a big believer in play to your strengths, and you know, get people around you who can offset that.
And it's one of those jobs that I can do it, but I'd prefer not to. I was getting to like the end of the month, and I had like 15, 20 sets to take photos of. And then, you know, you've got to edit them as well. And I was just getting so like stressful. Yeah. So she does that bit. I also outsource the naming of my dice. And
all right, okay, so
on Etsy, they have little descriptions, like little story descriptions. I outsource that as well. And my husband does that. So it really is like a bit of a family business at this point.
That's awesome. So you can really just focus on making the design decisions and coming up with the dice, all right?
Yeah, it's brilliant. I do like I run the Etsy, which is obviously not part of the design basis and all that stuff. And I do the postage packaging. But yes, it does give me more time to cast and like choose inks and all that lot. And I love that bit. I think my favorite bit of dice making is probably when they come out with the pressure pot, but it can also be the worst bit as well. Like if you've had like a bad day when you're casting and you take it out the pressure pot and you've just got like a bunch of bad ones, it's like the worst thing in the world. But once you get like a pot of absolute crackers, it's the best.
Oh, absolutely. And I also find too, you know, when I open up the pressure pot and there's just a whole bunch of bad ones, it's usually just been poor planning, or I haven't kind of, you know, decided what I was going to do before I started mixing resin. But Holly, it sounds like that's something you actually thrive on, right?
Kind of. So I plan pours to a certain extent. So I'll go in and be like, right, okay, today I'm making some cloud dice, and I will make cloud dice, but the colors, I might have like, oh, I'm going to do this color and this color, but then halfway through the thing I'm like, well, I've got 10 molds and I've got resin enough for all of them, so what other colors am I gonna do? And that's when I start like just grabbing stuff from my shelf and just mixing like loads of colors and just be like, oh, maybe this will do. I've actually got one that I pulled the other day, and it's clouds, it's leftover bits of resin, and I also just like dipped in a bit of blacking.
Ooh.
And it's got gold foil in there, and it looks weird as hell. I've not put it in a full mold yet, but I'm really excited to see what it comes out with, because they were just in blanks and they looked weird but cool. Like I actually really liked them, so I'm hoping when they go into like their full mold and they come out, there's going to be like super shiny and just incredible.
I'm pretty sure they're going to turn out amazing. Now obviously with so many repeat customers, do you get a lot of commissions and things like that?
Yeah, so I used to do it, and I used to actually open commission slots, but I stopped. They were really stressful, and I very much like sitting in front of my desk and just going crazy. But I do still offer commissions to certain people. Like I don't advertise it, and I actively say that my commissions are closed. But if somebody comes to me and says, oh, do you do commissions? I say, normally not, but give me your idea and I'll see if I want to do it. And more often than not, I do end up doing it. So I also do recasts as well. So if a design is quite popular and people ask for another set of it, I'll do a recast. And I don't really treat that as a commission because, you know, I've already done it. But yeah, currently I'm doing an art trade and I'm back on like a commission kind of style. And I love it. And it basically people like can provide me with their character, like descriptions of their character, their like art on like mood boards or anything like that. Basically anything that gives me a feel for their character or what they want their dice to be. And then I'll look at it and I'll think, oh, well, that would lead really well to some nail stickers that I've got with like a galaxy design inside, or I think that would lend itself to some feathers. It's very angelic, so get some gold leaf in there. And I'll basically explain out what like I'm doing or like what I'd like to do for the set and see if they're happy with that. And then if they say yes, that's like the road I'll go down. And then any adaptations that they want to make to it afterwards, I tend to do. I don't really have like a limit where I say, right, I'm going to create you three sets. If you don't like it by the end of it, I'm not doing it. I kind of just do it until they're happy. I think there's only once where I've said, look, I just can't get the effect that you're after. I'm sorry. So only one time. But then I say, so I'll do as many as you want, but any that you don't want will then get finished and put in my shop anyway. So it's not, they don't go to waste, which is really nice. And most people are okay with that.
And Holly, have you had any unusual commissions that you'd like to chat about?
Yeah. So the strangest commission I've had was actually a friend from work. He's massively into like LARPing and stuff like that. And he asked me to put his wisdom tooth in a dice so that he could make wisdom rolls because he was having it out. And I was like, yeah, sure. Like, weird, but yeah, let's go for it. I actually really enjoyed it. Like, don't get me wrong, I hate teeth. Like, just teeth, somebody's teeth, but it was wrapped up. I had gloves on the whole time because, you know, it was resin. And I cast it in a blank dice so there was no like inclusion protrusion, and then in the main dice, and it was absolutely brilliant and it was great and he loved it. And that's by far the weirdest, probably most grossest thing I've put in a dice, but yeah.
One of my favorite dice makers in Australia, Dire Fox, actually put prehistoric shark teeth in dice.
Oh, I think I saw those. They looked insane. They looked so gruesome. I loved them.
And as gruesome as that is, it still probably feels better to me than putting human teeth in dice.
Yeah, I get that.
Now, Holly, I was chatting with Nichelle, the Reliable Rogue, and we were chatting about the UK dice scene. Is it a large community? Is it growing? Tell us a little bit about dice in the UK.
So there are two other dice makers I know of in the same city as me, which is great. I've met up with both of them and they're absolutely lovely. And then there are dice makers all over the UK. Like we've met up a few times, like a few of us have met up. Last year, actually, it was amazing. The fun. We stayed in a Airbnb and we played loads of board games. And it was brilliant. It was amazing. But like, it is definitely not as big as it is in America. Like, I can't go to my local market and get anybody's interest in my dice. Like, it just doesn't happen. But I do quite a few sales in the UK. But most of my, I'd say about 60% of all the dice I make are sent overseas. And what, 40-50% to America.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think my book sales of the Crit Maker Guide mirror that exactly as well. So probably 40-50% US, 20% Australia, 10% to the UK.
That's amazing.
A few other small percentage points to, you know, some of the other nations.
I love that you've made a book about it. I haven't seen it. I've been trying to find it and I found it this morning on Amazon and I'm very tempted.
Yeah, you should. And if anyone's looking for that book, yeah, it is available on Amazon, or go and check out talkingdice.co. There's a link to it down a little bit down the page. But apart from that, there's just so many great resources out there and it's so helpful having makers actually, you know, showing you how to do things and saying, you know, if you do things this way, you're going to at least get some decent dice out of it.
Yeah. I mean, when I started like 4 years ago, there wasn't all of that really. There was a handful of makers that were doing stuff and it was just trying to like stalk them and watch them and just drain all of their knowledge, like if they would like talk to me. So yeah, and like using other resin techniques. I mean, rabbit holes I've gone down are nail art techniques. So like the dragon skin dice that I do, that's a gel nail technique using like soap bubbles, which is incredible. But yeah, that was, so I went down a bit of a hole for that one. But that was fun.
And I love the idea of borrowing different artistic styles from, you know, different creative outlets. You know, things like nail art, miniature painting, you know, traditional resin art, it's just become so huge on Instagram and TikTok and YouTube and all of that sort of stuff. And there's so much that we can learn from that, you know, and bring to dice making.
Yeah, you find this dice inspiration all over, like anything that you see, dice inspiration. Like I'm still yet to make a dice blank with a bottle of Hendo's, and I don't know whether you've ever heard of Henderson's Relish.
No.
But it's made in Sheffield. I can't even describe it. It's like this, like, have you heard of Worcestershire sauce?
Yeah.
Kind of like that, but way tastier.
Right.
Okay. And you put it on everything. It's great. And it's made here in Sheffield. And I want to put it, like, I want to put the sticker onto a blank dice. And I still haven't yet to do that, but I've got the stickers ready to do it from like previous bottles. So like I see things like that, and that's like amazing, like Sheffield heritage. So I'm like, oh, I could stick that on dice.
Now that you mention it, there's probably so many iconic Australian brands I'd love to turn into dice, you know, like apart from the boring Vegemite, you know, Bundaberg rum or
Bundy rum.
Things like that. Now, something else you've been getting into a bit lately, Holly, is stained glass. Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Yeah. Yes. I am loving stained glass at the minute. It's a hazardous hobby. I didn't realize how much you would cut yourself from cutting stained glass. Like, you know, you talk about glass, and yeah, glass is glass, you know, it's going to hurt. But like watching all these YouTube videos, because currently I'm self-taught, like I've just looked on Facebook, I've looked on YouTube on like how to do things and like people's like how-to videos, and they make it look so easy.
Oh yeah, they do.
And they never seem to cut themselves.
Yeah.
There was a week where I had basically a cut on every finger and trying to do dice, because I use isopropyl alcohol to clean, like, yeah, to ink and clean my dice and stuff.
Yeah.
And it was so painful.
Oh.
But I haven't cut myself in about a week, and I am absolutely loving stained glass. Like, I'm starting with the sun catchers, but I've got some like little daggers that I want to make. Everybody's getting stained glass for their birthdays and Christmas from me. Like, that's just happening now. But yeah, I'm loving it. I've got a dragon to make as well, like a dragon's head, like a big one. And I'm really excited for it. It's going to be great.
First time I saw someone doing that, you know, like apart from a professional, was Evan and Caitlin on YouTube, like one of my favorite, you know, maker couples. And and they were doing some stained glass, and I just went, oh, that looks so much fun. And then when I saw it on your Instagram, I'm like, I'm going to have to try that now.
Yeah, it's really good. I must admit, I wouldn't have picked it up if I didn't have the money from doing dice to back it, because it's a quite an expensive hobby. Like, the glass is so expensive, but it's incredible. I've got most of the materials now to do it, so all the new materials. I've got a course booked in to actually learn how to do it properly in September. Not that I'm not doing it properly, but obviously you're self-taught, and to actually learn things, it's great to get that first hand from a professional, which is what I'm hoping to do. And the course that I'm going to go to also teaches the traditional stained glass, so that's with like the lead came and everything. So the ones I'm doing at the minute is Cluster's Tiffany stained glass, and that's where you foil the edges in copper and then you solder over those edges. But yeah, it's really fun, and I am hoping to do more. I did try to do like a 3D T20, and my God, was that hard. Like, it is not neat at all. I had to walk away from it because I got really annoyed, because I put it all together, and as I was putting it together, it was just getting more and more uneven, and it's just this... It's great. It looks brilliant. I've only used like scrap pieces of glass from it, and it looks impressive. But you hold it at the right angle, it looks great. Hold it at any other angle. But yeah, hopefully I'm going to be doing some like 3D T20s.
And I'm pretty sure your customers are going to be seeing a lot more of the stained glass coming up on your Etsy store as well. And back to the socials for a second. Are there any other dice makers or artists that you think we should follow?
For dice artists, though, I like to follow everyone. So if somebody makes dice, I want to follow them. So I've picked out three just to start with, because, yeah. So Deep Sea Dice, they have the most amazing dice, and her galaxy sets are incredible. She actually does a how-to of how to make her galaxy sets, and that's where I've got my galaxy set from, like, designed from. She's absolutely amazing. She captures the night sky in dice absolutely perfectly. Transmutation Dice, she's got incredible textures in her dice, and there's stuff that I haven't seen anybody do before. And it's incredible, some of the stuff that she comes up with. And Infernal Foundry. So they're one of your fellow Aussie makers, and they're quite new. So Infernal Foundry have been using the necromancy style that was created by, or that was coined by, False Life Dice. And it's where you're using, like, clear, you drop ink drops in, and then you've got some, like, glitter, and it makes some absolutely incredible effects. And Infernal Foundry have been using that technique, and they have been absolutely smashing it. They look incredible. So I think they're definitely one of the new makers to keep an eye out for. There is another one that I really enjoy looking at. Archival Dice, and they make dice out of polymer clay, which is that, like, oven baked clay stuff.
Oh yes, they're absolutely amazing. And, you know, I'm going to have to stalk all these people on Instagram now.
Yes, please do. They're absolutely incredible.
You know, and I'm such a fan of people who are making dice out of things other than resin. I mean, I love resin dice, but I was checking out Jody's Dice Farm the other day. Absolutely incredible, making dice exclusively out of jesmonite.
Yeah, for the Econus. I really like jesmonite as a media. I don't do it as much as I need, as I should, really. But they are brilliant to use, but there are a lot more limitations with the design that you can do in jesmonite, because obviously it's completely opaque. But it's amazing. They do make
I guess it wouldn't be too dissimilar to using like fast set polyurethane resin, because that dries completely white. So you end up with, like, some really nice dirty pores and things like that. But yeah, a little bit harder for some of the really, you know, interesting and fun effects. But
yeah, so one of my favorite, like, designs is, like, the bloops and having, like, little windows of clear in color, and that is incredible. And you just can't do that with, like, opaque dice.
It's been absolutely amazing, and, you know, thank you for those great recommendations. Look, if people want to see more of the Dice Gin and see more of your incredible work, and you know, hopefully buy some of your dice. What's the best place for people to look for you and to find out? Yep.
Definitely Instagram. Definitely on Instagram. I'm easiest to contact on there as well. So I'll look at my messages really regularly on Instagram. You can contact me direct on Etsy as well, but the messaging thing on Etsy is not that great. So definitely Instagram.
Holly, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you today. Please go and check out the Dice Gin on Instagram and Etsy. Please buy her dice. They're absolutely amazing. And we really hope to have you back on another episode. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me on the show. It's been exciting. I'm looking forward to it coming out.
And if you're hearing this message, you've listened to the entire episode of Talking Dice, and we want to thank you from the bottom of our hearts. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please give us a big thumbs up and leave a review. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/talkingdice if you'd love to help us in the best way possible. And we'll catch you in the next episode of Talking Dice. Goodbye.